This special edition in-depth program on agriculture is brought to you in part by Steenhook Appraisals, Key Cooperative, Midtown Tire, Titan Machinery, Lighton State Bank, Four Seasons Yard Care, Golf Cars of Iowa and Pleasant Hill, Cargill of Eddyville, and First Bank of Linville and Sully. Join us for in-depth every weekday as Dr. Bob Leonard goes in-depth on the local topics that you care about following our hour-long news magazines at 8 a.m., 1 p.m., and 6 p.m. If you would like to suggest a topic for in-depth, send an email to bobleonard@kniakrl.com. Once again, thanks to our sponsors, Walmart of Pella, Allen Family Dentistry, Dutch Meadows, Eye Care Partners, Pella Precast Products, De Blumenhof, Laley USA, Central College, and Verduft Agency. Enjoy the program.
Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
What's the price of corn and beans? What's the chances of the drought continuing? What decisions are farmers making now, and how might world markets influence farming in Marion County? Let's go in depth with Leslie Miller and John Jensen, ag bankers at the Iowa State Savings Bank, Knoxville. Well, Leslie, as we enter the planting season, how do the prices of corn and beans look?
Well, if you look at the nearby prices, we're seeing quite a bit of strength, which we think is pretty much demand driven. There's just not much corn or soybeans in the pipeline, and so I think the processors are really bidding up the nearby prices. If you look at our nearby prices versus the fall prices, there's anywhere from $1.40 to $1.50 difference. So you've got nearby soybeans trading at like $14.40. July beans are around $14.10 or so, and then when you look at the fall contracts at November, you're talking $12.74. So there's a huge drop-off in the marketplace between this crop, the old crop, if you will, and the new crop prices. And I think that's partly because we expect there to be a lot more corn and soybean acres and a lot better weather.
Well, it's not going to take a lot to get better weather than we had last year, right, John?
Well, that's what all the experts seem to think, because everybody that you... I should say everybody I listen to or read, they're talking about how we're going to have either the second highest or the highest number of bushels ever, biggest crops ever this fall, and correspondingly lower prices. And, you know, the good thing is none of us can see the future. They may be right. But I sit out here and I look at the drought maps and how much area is still dry in that, and I'm thinking I could agree with you. As long as we have perfect weather all year long. But none of us thought we'd be shoveling snow in the spring, so perfect weather just went out the window already.
It sure did. And I bet last year, before the drought got bad, they were saying we were going to have record crops last year too, weren't they?
Yes, they were. And the prices, again, we had the same situation we have this year with a dollar to a dollar and a half difference between old and new crop prices. One of the charts that we had a chance to look at this morning is a drought monitor chart for March of 2013 that apparently looks different than any other March chart before. Lots more drought areas, if you will, severe drought areas. Granted, they're to the west of the Corn Belt, but still that's a concern. We've not seen a map like that before. And so some of the experts are looking at that and saying, this means we probably won't have a trend line crop for this year. On the other hand, I do know we picked up some statistical information last week when we were at the Ag Bankers Conference in Ames. One of the statisticians had tracked down the change in yield from a drought year to the year after, and the lowest amount of increase was 130%. So if you take your 123 bushel corn from last year, multiply that times 130%, you get in the 150 bushel range plus, which still gives us enough corn to have an impact on prices.
More in depth after this.
This special edition in-depth program on agriculture is brought to you in part by Skuring Utermarkt, Sims, McLeish, and Vermeer PC in Pella, The Sign Spot, Steenhook Excavating, Vandenbroek Concrete, Tassel Ridge Winery, Marion County Bank, Two Rivers Cooperative, Tri-County Veterinary Clinic, and Meniga Pest Control. Join us for in-depth every weekday as Dr. Bob Leonard goes in-depth on the local topics that you care about, following our hour-long news magazines at 8 a.m., 1 p.m., and 6 p.m. If you miss in-depth, you can hear this week's programs in their entirety by visiting the Radio Audio Media Player on KNIAKRLS.com. Once again, thanks to our sponsors, Two Rivers Cooperative, Creative Landscaping, Marion County Farm Bureau, Pleasantville Community Schools, Souter Family Farms, Westridge Nursing and Rehab Center, and Dandee Farms.
I continued my conversation with Leslie Miller and John Jensen, ag bankers at the Iowa State Savings Bank, Knoxville. Bankers and statisticians and everybody, it sounds like, is optimistic, except you just pulled up, John, the U.S. Drought Monitor, and there's a big swath of dryness to our west and entering Iowa, mainly northwest, all the way to central Iowa. So that's sort of foreboding, isn't it?
It is, really. Now, the interesting thing about it, Bob, and your radio audience, of course, can't see this, but last year in the middle of the height of the drought, I should say, last August, September, basically the south three-fourths of the United States, clear across the country, was in some sort of moisture-related difficulty. And what has been interesting is that we have watched this winter that there's been enough moisture east of the Mississippi that a lot of that drought area has been dissipated. There's still some dryness in the Georgia and the Carolinas and down into Florida. But the Ohio River Valley and the Eastern Corn Belt doesn't have any apparent moisture problems right now. But you get on the other side of the Mississippi River, and starting with Iowa and moving clear out to the West Coast, this is a colorful map. In some areas, the dark brown on this map indicates what they call exceptional drought. You know, very, very, very dry. Now, part of that area, you get on out into Nebraska and the Dakotas and that, they run water on it. Mm-hmm. They've got pivots and irrigation systems, and they run water on it. So they may produce some crop anyway. But when it's that extremely dry, it's tough to keep the ground damp enough to raise a good crop.
That's true. But on the other side of the coin, if you look at the moisture that we've had in Illinois, Ohio, Indiana, there's a lot more corn grown in those states than there is in Nebraska or Kansas or North Dakota or South Dakota. So we've had moisture in areas that do raise a lot more corn than the areas that are dry. Last year, that was just totally reverse. You had Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio that were exceptionally dry.
Well, from here, it doesn't look like it's a good time to be a Nebraska farmer, does it?
I think there's probably some people in Nebraska that would agree with you. Now, for the rest of us, Bob, and I don't wish ill on our neighbors to the west, but it might mean that we have a better crop and better price because they raise less crop.
Okay. And when I look to the east, if I'm remembering right, Illinois was in more trouble than us last summer, but it looks pretty good. Is my recollection correct?
Yes, that's the indications we have so far, is that there's been ample moisture, really, starting with harvest last fall on through the winter months in Illinois and Indiana and Ohio.
So they've recovered pretty well.
That's correct, yes.
Because they were in bad shape last year, and it looks like Indiana and Ohio, that whole area is doing well. But again, they don't do what we do, right?
Illinois raises almost as much corn as Iowa does. Between Illinois and Iowa, we have over 50% of the corn crop. So, you know, they've got a good 25% of that crop that could go into some ground with ample moisture.
More in depth after this.
Thank you. This special edition in-depth program on agriculture is brought to you in part by Two Rivers Cooperative, Don's Heating and Cooling, Goff Farming and Trucking, Marion County Rural Water, Heartland Co-op of Prairie City, Monroe, Newton, and Runnels, and McCall Monument. Join us for in-depth every weekday as Dr. Bob Leonard goes in-depth on the local topics that you care about, following our hour-long news magazines at 8 a.m., 1 p.m., and 6 p.m. If you would like to suggest a topic for in-depth, send an email to bobleonard@kniakrls.com. Once again, thanks to our sponsors, Pleasantville State Bank, Marion County Auto Body, Knoxville Hospital and Clinics, Motor and Auto Group, Vermeer Incorporated, and Cushman Construction. Enjoy the program.
I continued my conversation with Leslie Miller and John Jensen, ag bankers at the Iowa State Savings Bank, Knoxville. Bankers and statisticians and everybody, it sounds like, is optimistic, except you just pulled up, John, the U.S. Drought Monitor, and there's a big swath of dryness to our west and entering Iowa, mainly northwest, all the way to central Iowa. So that's sort of foreboding, isn't it?
It is, really. Now, the interesting thing about it, Bob, and your radio audience, of course, can't see this, but last year in the middle of the height of the drought, I should say, last August, September, basically the south three-fourths of the United States, clear across the country, was in some sort of moisture-related difficulty. And what has been interesting is that we have watched this winter that there's been enough moisture east of the Mississippi that a lot of that drought area has been dissipated. There's still some dryness in the Georgia and the Carolinas and down into Florida. But the Ohio River Valley and the Eastern Corn Belt doesn't have any apparent moisture problems right now. But you get on the other side of the Mississippi River, and starting with Iowa and moving clear out to the West Coast, this is a colorful map. In some areas, the dark brown on this map indicates what they call exceptional drought. You know, very, very, very dry. Now, part of that area, you get on out into Nebraska and the Dakotas and that, they run water on it. Mm-hmm. They've got pivots and irrigation systems, and they run water on it. So they may produce some crop anyway, but when it's that extremely dry, it's tough to keep the ground damp enough to raise a good crop.
That's true, but on the other side of the coin, if you look at the moisture that we've had in Illinois, Ohio, Indiana, there's a lot more corn grown in those states than there is in Nebraska or Kansas or North Dakota or South Dakota. So we've had moisture in areas that do raise a lot more corn than the areas that are dry. Last year, that was just totally reversed. You had Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio that were exceptionally dry.
Well, from here, it doesn't look like it's a good time to be a Nebraska farmer, does it?
I think there's probably some people in Nebraska that would agree with you. Now, for the rest of us, Bob, and I don't wish ill on our neighbors to the west, but it might mean that we have a better crop and better price because they raise less crop.
Okay. And when I look to the east, if I'm remembering right, Illinois was in more trouble than us last summer, but it looks pretty good. Is my recollection correct?
Yes, that's the indications we have so far, is that there's been ample moisture, really, starting with harvest last fall on through the winter months in Illinois and Indiana and Ohio.
So they've recovered pretty well.
That's correct, yes.
Because they were in bad shape last year, and it looks like Indiana and Ohio, that whole area is doing well. But again, they don't do what we do, right?
Illinois raises almost as much corn as Iowa does. Between Illinois and Iowa, we have over 50% of the corn crop. So, you know, they've got a good 25% of that crop that could go into some ground with ample moisture.
Now, normally about April 15th, we've got a lot of corn in the ground, don't we?
In some years.
Some years.
Now, last year was exceptional. When you asked that question, Bob, last year was exceptional. We already had corn planters running last year, but we also had 80-degree temperatures some days. In a lot of years, April 15th is kind of the starting date.
Is it? Okay, so that's when people just plan. Are we going to make April 15th?
We start anticipating, you know. And you start to ask, are we going to make it this year? Well, looking at it today, I don't know. But, you know, the interesting thing about our soils here in the Midwest and in Iowa particularly is this time of the year, they dry out quickly. They become soils that we can till very quickly. And it wouldn't surprise me.
Things are looking up for our farmers. And then if things are looking up for our farmers, they're looking up for our downtown merchants. It looks like we've got a good year ahead of us, except for the possibility of the drought. But I guess we could have floods, we could have hail, we could have all kinds of things. I guess that's the business of being a farmer in Iowa.
It truly is.
More in depth after this.
This special edition in-depth program on agriculture is brought to you in part by Raceway Tire and Exhaust, Kevin Wadley, CPA, Farm Bureau Financial Services Agent Cliff Douglas, Knoxville Hy-Vee, Freebird Bail Bonds, Iowa State Savings Bank, and the Knoxville Raceway. Join us for in-depth every weekday as Dr. Bob Leonard goes in-depth on the local topics that you care about following our hour-long news magazines at 8 a.m., 1 p.m., and 6 p.m. If you miss in-depth, you can hear this week's programs in their entirety by visiting the Radio Audio Media Player on KNIA. KRLS.com. Once again, thanks to our sponsors, Norm Rosendahl Tiling and Septic, CC Equipment Sales and Rental, Pleasantville FFA Alumni, HCI Care Services, formerly Hospice of Central Iowa, Hewitt Service Center, Iowa State Savings Bank, and the Knoxville Raceway.
I continued my conversation with Leslie Miller and John Jensen, ag bankers at the Iowa State Savings Bank, Knoxville. Well, now since we're talking about the world, how about the unrest in the Middle East and Africa? How is that impacting any of the markets?
I would guess psychologically more than anything else. You know, the thing is, Bob, and again, I'll use China just for example's sake. They've got a lot of people. They still need to eat. They still want food for them. And so we hear all this headline stuff about unrest in Syria, et cetera, et cetera. But down underneath it all, there's still grain being bought and sold because people need food.
Part of that unrest does have a little bit of an impact on our commodity prices from the standpoint that the dollar still is perceived in the world as being the safest currency. And when you have unrest, especially economic unrest in other countries, there is more of a flight to the dollar. It drives the value of the dollar up, and it makes our commodities more expensive to purchase by other nations. So if that trend continues, that could also put some pressure on prices because our grain becomes too expensive. When you talk about Africa, There's a lot of reports about trying to expand agriculture in Africa. You know, we've seen our own reports in Iowa with Bruce Rastetter's involvement with some groups in Africa. But now apparently the Chinese government is actually entering into some agreements with some of these countries to try and build pods or communal villages that have an agricultural base so they can start raising crops in the hopes of having something to export back to China.
So that emerging market's affecting everything, and I suspect India, that emerging market is too. Are they doing a lot of importing?
India is normally, I believe, an exporter of wheat. In 2008, there was a global wheat shortage, and we saw lots of bans put in place for exporting wheat from India and the Ukraine. That's not the case now. And as a matter of fact, China's been trying to improve its trade ties with the Ukraine so that they can import wheat and corn even from that area. So China is out shopping for other providers of corn, which could have an impact on us. Up till now, we've been the person that supplied the corn. We've used our excess corn to feed the rest of the world. If South America starts planting more corn, if you can raise crops in Africa, and if the Ukraine starts growing more corn, we may not be the only source of corn, and that can have some very long-term impacts on our marketplace.
It's not going to be as good a corn as our corn, though, is it?
Well, of course not.
We have higher quality, the best soil. I guess we'll get more out of it, huh?
They bought their seed from Pioneer, did I say more?
Yeah. Everybody gets their germplasm from pretty much the same source. But again, yields on ground in China are not even half of what we have here. But if they could get them to that point, that would be less demand for corn from the U.S. If these countries can farm intensively as we do in this country, they could produce some very, very big crops.
Bob, I believe they will get there. It's a matter of learning more about the technology that we've developed and learning what they have over there. In other words, what they need to do to improve fertility, etc. But I believe that they will get there someday in terms of productivity. I also believe that as they continue to advance, so will we. And we'll someday be able to figure out how to raise another 100 bushel an acre of corn here. We could get into a real involved discussion on what that might do to prices and demand and everything, but I believe in the short end of it is the technology will keep driving us to do more and more.
And it's interesting, each country, because we are, you know, we are different states or different nations, each country will keep trying to excel and do better and better for the economy. But the multinational corporations, they really have no allegiances anymore, do they? They want to maximize their production and profit wherever they are on the face of the earth. That's something sort of new, isn't it?
I don't know that it's brand new. It's been going on since the late 80s. We've seen more and more globalization of companies going where they think labor might be cheaper or resources cheaper. And it does make it very difficult for our American labor force to compete. But yeah, that's the impact of globalization on the world economy. Just people will go where they think they can produce a quality product at a lower price. And, you know, we can argue that the quality may not be as good as what's produced here, and sometimes it's not. Oftentimes it's not. But at any rate, corporations will try to do that to maximize their profits.
Well, they have to. That's their obligation, isn't it?
That's what they're in business for.
But then we have to rely upon the skills, the virtuosity of our farmers to put us ahead then, if that's what's left, right?
I guess that's probably a good way of saying it, Bob. We will have, the farmers will have assistance from the universities and from seed and chemical companies to develop better and better products. But in the end, they have to go out to the soil and make it work. And so it really does boil down to the farmer doing even a better and better job with the tools that he has at hand that will make him more productive.
Thanks to Leslie Miller and John Jensen for contributing to the program. For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.